Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 8, Chapters 11 and 12. Chapter 11. For instance, at this time, armed soldiers surrounded a little town in Phrygia, of which the inhabitants were all Christians, every man of them, and setting fire to it, burnt them, along with young children and women, as they were calling upon the God who is over all. The reason of this was that all the inhabitants of the town, to a man, the curator himself and the duumvirs, and all the officials and the whole assembly, confessed themselves Christians, and refused to give the least heed to those who bade them commit idolatry. And there was a certain other person who had attained to a high position under the Romans, Audactus by name, a man of illustrious Italian birth, who had advanced through every grade of honor under the emperors, so as to pass blamelessly through the general administration of what they called the magistracy and ministry of finance. And besides all this, having distinguished himself by his noble deeds of godliness and his confessions of the Christ of God, he was adorned with the crown of martyrdom, enduring the conflict for piety while actually engaged as finance minister. Chapter 12. Why need I now mention the rest by name, or number the multitude of the men, or picture the varied tortures inflicted upon the wonderful martyrs? Sometimes they were slain with the axe, as was the case with those in Arabia. At other times, their legs were broken, as happened to those in Cappadocia. On some occasions, they were suspended on high by the feet, head downward, while a slow fire was kindled beneath, so that when the wood was alight, they were choked by the rising smoke, a treatment meted out to those in Mesopotamia. On others, the noses, ears, and hands were mutilated, and the remaining limbs and parts of the body cut up, as was done at Alexandria. Why need one rekindle the memory of those at Antioch who were roasted on heated gridirons, not unto death, but with a view to lengthy torture, and of others who put their right hand into the very fire sooner than touch the accursed sacrifice? Some of them to escape such trials, before they were caught and fell into the hands of those that plotted against them, threw themselves down from the tops of lofty houses, regarding death as a prize snatched from the wickedness of evil men. And a certain holy person, admirable for strength of soul, yet in body a woman, and famed as well by all that were at Antioch for wealth, birth, and sound judgment, had brought up in the precepts of piety her two unmarried daughters, distinguished for the full bloom of their youthful beauty. Much envy was stirred up on their account, and busied itself in tracing in every manner possible where they lay concealed. And when it was discovered that they were staying in a foreign country, of set purpose it recalled them to Antioch. Thus they fell into the soldiers' toils. When therefore the woman saw that herself and her daughters were in desperate straits, she placed before them in conversation the terrible things that awaited them from human hands, and the most intolerable thing of all these terrors, the threat of fornication. She exhorted both herself and her girls that they ought not to submit to listen to even the least whisper of such a thing, and said that to surrender their souls to the slavery of demons, then worse than all kinds of death and every form of destruction. So she submitted that to flee to the Lord was the only way of escape from it all. And when they had both agreed to her opinion, and had arranged their garments suitably around them, on coming to the middle of their journey, they quietly requested the guard to allow them a little time for retirement, and threw themselves into the river that flowed by. Thus were these their own executioners. But another pair of maidens, also at Antioch, godly in every respect, and true sisters, famous by birth, distinguished for their manner of life, young in years, in the bloom of beauty, grave of soul, pious in their deportment, admirable in their zeal, The worshippers of demons commanded to be cast into the sea, as if the earth could not endure to bear such excellence. Thus it happened with these martyrs, and others in Pontus suffered things terrible to hear. Sharp reeds were driven through their fingers under the tips of the nails. In the case of others, lead was melted down by fire, and the boiling, burning stuff poured down their backs, roasting the most essential parts of their body. Others endured in their privy parts and bowels sufferings that were disgraceful, pitiless, and unmentionable, which the noble and law-abiding judges devised with more than usual eagerness, displaying their cruelty as if it were some great stroke of wisdom, striving to outdo one another by ever inventing novel tortures, as if contending for prizes in a contest. But the end of these calamities came when they were now worn out with their excessive wickedness, and were utterly weary of killing and surfeited and sated with shedding blood, and so turned to what they considered merciful and humane conduct, so that they no longer thought that they were doing any harm to us. For it was not fitting, they said, to pollute the cities with the blood of their own people, or to involve in a charge of cruelty the supreme government of the rulers, a government that was well disposed and mild towards all, but rather that beneficence of the humane and imperial authority should be extended to all, and the death penalty no longer inflicted. For, they declared, that this, their punishment of us, had been stopped, thanks to the humanity of the rulers. Then orders were given that their eyes should be gouged out and one of their legs maimed. For this was, in their opinion, humanity, and the lightest of punishments inflicted upon us. Hence, because of this humanity on the part of godless men, it is now no longer possible to tell the incalculable number of those who had their right eye first cut out with a sword and then cauterized with fire, and the left foot rendered useless by the further application of branding irons to the joints, and who after this were condemned to the provincial copper mines, not so much for service as for ill usage and hardship, and withal fell in with various other trials, which it is not possible even to recount, for their brave and good deeds surpass all reckoning. In these conflicts, verily, the magnificent martyrs of Christ were conspicuous throughout all the world, and, as was natural, everywhere filled with amazement the eyewitnesses of their bravery, while in their own persons they furnished a clear proof that the power of our Savior is truly divine and inexpressible. To mention indeed each by name would be a long task, but not to say an impossibility. Here ends Book 8 and Chapters 11 and 12. And we'll move on to some notes and commentary. These chapters continue to report on the godly martyrs who laid down their lives during the Diocletian persecution. Chapter 11 begins by describing an unnamed small town in Phrygia, where Eusebius says all the inhabitants were Christians, including the city officials. The Roman soldiers set fire to the town and burned the inhabitants alive, including young children and women. The chapter next notes the martyrdom of a certain Audactus, a man of illustrious Italian birth, who at that time was also put to death, and he was serving as a magistrate and a minister of finance. Chapter 12 traces the gruesome sufferings of other Christians throughout the Roman world. In Arabia, they were slain with the axe. In Cappadocia, their legs were broken. In Mesopotamia, they were hung over smoking fires. In Alexandria, they were mutilated. In Antioch, they were roasted on the gridiron. Eusebius also notes that some in Antioch took their own lives by jumping off lofty houses before they could be seized. As another example of the piety of the Christians in Antioch, he describes a noble woman of Antioch and her two unmarried daughters, and the daughters were captured in a foreign country and were being transported back to Antioch. At risk of being violated by the soldiers In the midst of their journey, they threw themselves into a river and drowned, thus becoming, as Eusebius puts it, their own executioners. He also notes another pair of maidens at Antioch who were also thrown into the sea rather than compromise and sacrifice to the idols. In Pontus, Christians suffered various cruel tortures, like having reeds driven under their fingernails, having melted lead poured on their backs, and having their private parts abused. Eusebius says it was as if the tormentors tried to outdo one another in the novelty of their tortures. Worn out with their bloodlust against Christians, Eusebius says that the rulers determined to promote a supposedly more humane approach and to give humane punishments rather than taking the lives of the believers. But the humane punishments ended up being the gouging out of the right eye and the crippling or maiming of the left foot of believers before sending them to slave labor in the copper mines. These martyrs, Eusebius concludes, were conspicuous throughout all the world, and he says that to name each one would be impossible. In conclusion, these chapters note the universality throughout the Roman world and the brutality of the Diocletian persecution. It took place in a Roman world where unspeakable tortures could be committed against believers. Eusebius even praises those Christians who took their own lives in such situations without seeming to pass judgment on suicide as sinful. Many of those that were put to death, were either maimed and then enslaved. And so he stresses, Eusebius does, that the sufferings of the Diocletian persecution were indeed terrible. Again, not just including death, but also maiming and work in the copper mines. So it was universal across many parts of the Roman Empire. And he also says at the end that really it's impossible to count all those who suffered during this time. So once again, the Diocletian persecution was in Eusebius's mind and in his presentation here in the history, really the worst and the most widespread of the persecutions that the early Christians had to endure. And yet they did endure, and many met their fates with courage and with bravery and without wavering in the face of their persecutions. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. Hope this has been helpful, and I will look forward to speaking to you in the next edition of this series. Till then, take care and God bless.